Well, good morning. I want to thank your leadership here for allowing me to do this presentation. This is a personal ministry of mine that I started a long time ago because I just felt that people needed it. And then I quit for 5 years, and I started when I became the director at Cherokee Home, and then because I didn't have time. And then I started back early this year when I moved back last year into the development role. My purpose here this morning is the groups that I'm trying to address more than anything is the older group of you, so that you will have at least a familiarity enough to talk about the topic. But on the other hand, we have the youth in here as well. And the reason I like to have them in here as well is because if nothing else, this will cause a lunchtime conversation about what we talked about. Because parents need to talk about this with their children. Children need to talk about this with their parents. This first session this morning is mostly about social media. 5 years ago, I wasn't talking about social media. It was there, but it wasn't a problem. Well, it's a problem now, right? And then in the second session, it's a very positive, during the sermon period, it's a very positive lesson about how to be a good Christian family. It's not original to me, but it's one that encourages me every time I present it, and I hope it'll encourage you as well and give you some good methods on being a better Christian family. Then the third and final session after lunch today, I understand we're having pizza. The session after that is about television. Now, I wrote the original version of it 15 years ago. Not much has changed except the numbers and the quantity that we watch. By the way, the average person watches 6 hours of TV per day. That's the average, all right? So we're going to talk about that. And it's mostly designed for the parents of younger children and teenagers in order to help you understand not only what's there, but also to understand how to cope with it and how to handle some of the problem areas there. Now, this first session is not terribly encouraging, okay? The first version of this that I wrote early this year, it was dark. It was real dark. And I've upped it a little bit, so there's not quite as depressing. But we do need to look at it realistically. And some of the things about social media are wonderful. I absolutely love my social media accounts. My daughter puts pictures of the grandbabies on the Facebook at least every day, at least a video every other day. All right. So I do like Facebook and a few of the others. I use LinkedIn and a bunch of others. We'll talk about that. But let me tell you what happened during the five-year gap. I realized that the problem with social media and the problem with the internet is not directly related to social media, not directly related to the internet. The problem is morality. We've got just a basic problem with morality, and the internet and social media and the other social media platforms are just the channel for that improper content. And so you got to look at the moral side of it, because the real issue is morality, not the media itself. Let's look at Romans chapter 1, beginning at verse 16. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were hardened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal men and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in their lust of their hearts to impurity, to dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. I really believe that in our society, media, social media, and the electronics and all the other issues related to that are our new idol. We pretty well worship it in many ways. I like to think that, no, I'm not directly affected by this. A couple weeks ago at the office, I work at Cherokee Home, and at the office and in town, our phone system went out for 36 hours. Our smartphones, our cell phone system went out for 36 hours, and our hard line went out for 24 hours. Try that sometime. Okay? All right? On a weekday. All right? It'll drive you crazy because we are so dependent on that. That's sort of like the gentleman last week. I did this presentation a couple weeks ago in Denver, or near Denver, Pueblo. And I'm sitting, I made eye contact with the guy at the airport. You know what that means when you make eye contact with somebody at the airport? It means you talk to each other. All right? And we were talking, and I didn't have my phone with me at the time. And he says, "Can you see anybody that's not playing on their phone right now?" Now, if he'd caught me 30 minutes earlier, he'd have caught me too. All right? And the issue was no. That's how dependent we are. I can't talk about what I need to talk about without adding this slide right here. So I've had to put this in order so that some of you will know the context of what I'm speaking of. We now have 6 generations. The Grace generation is roughly my parents, a little bit older than them, born in 1901, 1926. Most of them are gone now. All right. Matures to the silence. That's my dad's generation. All right. My mother's generation. Born 27 to 45. Then there's the boomers. And that's me. I'm right in the middle of the boomers. I'm 2 months, according to the way most people classified the dates, I'm 2 months from being in the dead center. January 1 of 55 is the dead center, and I was born October 54. All right. Generation X, that's my older daughter's generation, between 65 and 80. She was born in 80. The millennials are those born from 81 to 98. That includes my two younger children. And then there's the group that they haven't quite finished naming yet. And that's what we're actually going to be talking about today. Now, I call it here first the iGen. Y'all hold me to it. 5 years from now, that's the term that's going to stick. Okay? That's the one that's going to stick. Generation Z is what they're also called. They're also called boomlets. They're called all sorts of things. But the one that's going to stick is the iGen. It stands for Internet Generation. Why? Because the smartphone came out when they were born, give or take a couple of years. Our children and grandchildren are currently from age 5 to about 19 years old. And that's who we're going to talk about. When I stopped this 5 years ago, we were talking about the millennials. But no, the millennials are all grown up now, all right? I'm not sure that some of the problems we have millennials are any better than they were 5 years ago, but nevertheless, they're grown up. The best-known forms of media are, and this is for those of you that are totally unfamiliar with this, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, blogs, and YouTube. We're going to look at those in a little bit more detail as we go here. Facebook. I want you to notice the number of people on Facebook. 1,860,000,000 people on Facebook. And according to one source, half of everybody on Facebook go to their site sometime during the day. Don't think that's not a big deal when a significant part of the world goes to Facebook each and every day. Facebook, we all have fun with it. I look at my grandbaby pictures or my grandbaby videos, and I have fun with it. But it also has some problem areas that I wish I had time to go into in real detail because they're a little bit complicated. But its social impact, no one diminishes that. You know, everything related to communication now centers mostly around Facebook. People like Facebook, mostly because it's not face-to-face. Isn't that ironic? That's the name. Okay, all right. Facebook is not face-to-face, and that changes the way that we communicate. I read a report yesterday that said that the reason people are so mean and nasty on Facebook is because they're not looking at the person, that they would not be that way if they were sitting across the aisle from them, across the table from them. Facebook allows users to broadcast or share images to each other and thereby to engage others to be engaged in their post. Anybody want to guess who the most common person signing up for Facebook today by family relationship and age? Anybody want to guess? Somebody heard somebody. I got my hearing aids in today, so I think I heard you. What's that? I didn't hear you. What? The boomers? Yeah, it's the boomers, but it's the gender of the boomers. The most common person signing up for Facebook on any given day is the 54-year-old grandma. I'm not making that up. All right, 54-year-old grandma. Why? Because of the grandbaby pictures. They keep claiming that the millennials are on Facebook less. Not really. They're just on the other more. Okay, they're not going down in how much they use Facebook. They're just going up in how much they use some of the others. But Facebook is popular. Everybody loves it. Almost everybody's on it. Recent studies have shown that Facebook causes negative effects on self-esteem. This is a real problem. What is the favorite thing for us to talk about on Facebook besides our grandbabies? I didn't hear. What did he say? I can't hear you, but that's okay. All right. It is our vacations and our last trip. Okay? Now, what if you're a person who can't take vacations or trips? Or how much fun you had at this various activity or this party or whatever, and you're secluded and you don't have the opportunity to that, or you don't have the money to do those kind of things. What does that do to your self-esteem? Now, there's a whole lot of people that can't do a whole lot of things. So Facebook creates some real self-esteem problems that they're just now beginning to deal with. Actually, I heard an NPR report on that Friday about just how significant that is, and that the people that designed Facebook, the founder and so on, they knew that it was going to create those problems when they did it. But they said, we just did it anyway. Okay. YouTube. Now, YouTube, notice there's 1 billion subscribers to YouTube. YouTube is now the most popular network for youth. Anybody want to guess why youth love YouTube so much? It has to do with what they don't like to do. They don't like to read. Okay? And if you don't like to read and you can watch it on video, why in the world do you need to read? 1 billion subscribers. It is the most popular network for children, for youth, teens, and so on. It's good for that, y'all. Okay? We got some property over in East Texas, and I put in a service pole, and I needed to wire that service pole. Now, this is 220 stuff, y'all, stuff I really shouldn't mess with by myself. I should have hired somebody for. I watched 11 videos on YouTube on how to do that, okay? And I wired that up 2 years ago, and it's still working fine, okay? All right? That's what YouTube is good for. It is the most popular destination for teenagers. Now, we have to talk about the dark side for just a moment. Porn is prohibited on YouTube. However, they can't monitor all those links, and they can't monitor all those comments. So, the videos themselves are usually pretty okay, all right? But the content connected to those isn't, okay? Those links can go to very, very bad places. Censorship is poorly regulated. Why is censorship poorly regulated? Because there's 1 billion subscribers, and they don't have a whole lot of people sitting around with nothing better to do than watch your comments. They don't have the time for that. So there's a real problem there. It's often reported on Instagram as well. Let me tell you why we have to talk about pornography, even though I don't like talking about it in church. Because pornography is now the single most common usage of the internet. Did y'all know that? It has now beat out emails as being the single most common usage of the internet. So we can't ignore that, okay? Especially with those moral issues I was alluding to a while ago. Instagram has 600 million subscribers. Okay, then there's Twitter. Now, we all know about Twitter now because our president likes to use Twitter. All right, but I understand this last week, they increased the number of characters you could use. Okay, all right, that'll change a lot because now we get to read 1 Twitter instead of 2. All right, 313 million subscribers. I have a Twitter account, but I've never learned how to use it, y'all. Okay, it's there. It is mostly used by older adults, and it's got its place. But it's not used a whole lot by our teens. And then there's Snapchat. I talk a little bit more about Snapchat. Even though there's only 166,000 users, okay, it is very, almost all of those users are youth, are teenagers. Notice that second idea there. Okay, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the reason Snapchat is so popular is because the stuff disappears. That means there's no evidence. Okay, in reality, that evidence doesn't really disappear. You know, talk to any police officer about this stuff. Find out what he can get a hold of if he wants to. All right? Nothing ever disappears on the internet. Really, it doesn't. The first time I was ever on the internet at all was my syllabus for a class I was teaching at Clarendon College back in 2002. All right? Do you know you can still find that if you want to 15 years later? It's there, hidden somewhere. All right? Stuff doesn't really disappear. But it sort of disappears on Snapchat. Photos and videos usually disappear in 10 seconds. Now notice that second line there. 30% of youth users claim they use it because their parents don't use it. All right, fair enough. The average person per day that uses it 18 times per day, and 54% of all American teens use it sometime every day.
I've got to check that 166,000 number because that's not high enough. It's probably 166 million. I don't know. It's way up there. Pinterest. Okay. Does anybody here use Pinterest? I'm looking for a male. I've never met one yet. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I call Pinterest the sissy channel. My daughter says that's sexist, but that's what I call it. Okay. All right. 83% female users. I don't know what it's good for, but they love it. Okay. All right. 150 million subscribers. Of course, 83% of them are female. I'm certified in three or four versions of social media marketing, and they keep telling me that I really, really need to learn Pinterest in order to communicate with women better on the internet, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet. So LinkedIn. If we did that reverse question again, how many of you men have LinkedIn accounts versus women, that number would be similar. Okay. LinkedIn is not, I don't think it's quite as high percentage in one direction or the other, but it's way on up there. For those of you that aren't familiar with LinkedIn, notice there's only 106 million people on LinkedIn. It is basically, I'm on LinkedIn, I use LinkedIn. Basically, it's a network where you pretty well have to put some version of your resume on there in order to be on LinkedIn. So it's for business networking. If you want all your colleagues and everybody that you care about related to your work to know how you're doing and what you're doing, you have a LinkedIn account so that you can talk about it. But you can also have serious discussions about your work on LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is now owned by Google, which is now called Alphabet. And so having a LinkedIn account, for those of you that care about this topic, greatly increases your search engine optimization for whatever you're doing if you have a LinkedIn account as well. Puts you way up at the top. Why? Because Google likes to subscribe those that are giving them money. All right. At the back, on that table, there's a stack of books. Those now belong to your library. I brought them. And I hope you'll pay attention to them. I know that you can find any one of them. You can find a Kindle version if you want to. You can find them on Amazon. Okay, they're all easy to find, and they're not expensive. But those of all the books that I've looked at lately as I've prepared for this, that's my favorite stack. Okay, and I wanted you to have those as well. But I want to bring up some information from one in particular. This is the front page of the book, all right, or the cover. The smartphone generation, the statistical portrait. The constant presence of the internet, particularly social media, is changing the behavior and attitudes of today's teens. Now let me tell you why I loved this book when it came out just a few months ago. I've been talking about this directly or indirectly for years now. And almost everything that I've had to say, or almost everything anybody else has had to say, has been what we call anecdotal. That means we think it's that way. Okay. I had all sorts of anecdotal stories and things like that. We had very little scientific evidence related to some of the issues that we talk about. She collects them. This author, Jean Twenge, she looked at 40 years worth of longevity studies, 10 different studies, and put together information related to how things really changed. Now, I don't have time to go through all the things she talked about, but I'm doing this to show you how much this instrument right here changed everything. Everything we're talking about from this point right now is about smartphones. Because when the smartphone came out, the world changed. Any of you my age remember the first time you ever pulled something up off the internet on your phone? Wasn't it awesome? Okay. Wow. I can pull up the internet on my phone? Okay. I loved it. I remember it well. Of course, I remember the first time I picked up one of these box phones too. All right. Long before the internet came out. We're going to look at a bunch of charts, and I want you to notice that in these charts that we're going to look at, you can't see it hardly. It shows well on this screen over here. There's a line right there underneath the H on that iPhone. Okay, on all of these slides, that's roughly when the iPhone came out. Now, I want to read the rest of this title, though. IGN, why today's super-connected teens are growing up less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood, and what that means for the rest of us. And it's a serious study, and it's a serious book. And it's not all negative. It's just saying that the world is different. My daughter, I went to visit her yesterday in Abilene, visit the grandbabies, and she's a teacher at Abilene High. And she said, Dad, these kids don't like to think. When I was growing up, I griped if somebody made me do real work, all right? She said these considered the kids in her class and this is inner city Abilene, but these kids in her class considering it burdensome to have to think. And she says it's a real problem, because how is she going to get them to where they need to be? Let's look at some statistics. And I find some of these just humorous. There's a reason I put them in here. Some of them just show you how much the smartphone has changed things. This is not hanging out with their friends. That top line is 12th graders. The next line, the blue one, is 10th graders. And the next one is 8th graders. Now, this means going to the mall and doing things. Going anywhere and doing things. Look what has happened since the phone came out. It was mostly level. Okay? Mostly level. At least for the 12th graders. Then it started dropping off. And the others started dropping off. Y'all, this is the direct influence of the phone. Yeah. Why? Because you can have just as much of the things you want to do sitting in your bedroom or sitting in the kitchen or sitting in the living room playing on your phone. Why in the world do you need to go anywhere? Now, I'm going to be honest for just a second on the other side of this so that you'll get the whole picture. It's not all the phone. It's mostly the phone. The rest of it's the parents. And that's not me talking. That's experts talking. Okay? What happened just 4 years after this that changed our world? September 11th, 9/11. Okay? All right? Our parents, and I've actually gone after church and talked to parents about this year. And what happens is we're scared. And the lately stuff that's happened lately doesn't make that any better. Okay? We're nervous and we're scared. So the parents are overprotecting their children as well. Even in their estimate, they'll tell me they're overprotecting their children. Why? Because there's so much bad in the world now, we don't want our kids to be a part of it. And that's easy to do. My kids, my grandkids yesterday were there's a big statue of a book character in one of the parks there in Abilene. It's statue's about 12 feet high. It's got all sorts of places you can climb around on. It's a perfect place for kids to climb. And my two grandbabies were up on top of it. And one's 7 and one's 5. And I kept thinking that the younger one's going to accidentally kick the older one. And if she did that, she's going to fall off and get hurt real, real, real bad. You ever get that twinge, that fear, that adrenaline, not quite adrenaline, but of something bad is fixing to happen? Well, that's what I was feeling. So I can imagine if you're a parent trying to raise those children right now and you see all sorts of things in the world that are bad, you're going to try to keep them away from it. One way of doing that is to keep them at home. And that's what's happening. What about the loneliness part or the suicide, which is what this leads to? All right. Notice that it peaks right there at 2007. More likely to feel lonely. This is the percentage of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders who agree or mostly agree with the statement, I often feel left out of things. A lot of times I feel lonely. Notice how that is just skyrocketing there as the years continue. And it all started the same year that the smartphone came out, or the iPhone was released specifically. What about getting sleep? Well, this leveled out for a while, but now it's going back up. This is the percentage of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders who get less sleep. Now, I find this one the most humorous. This is in no rush to drive. And I've talked to the parents about this as well. When I was growing up, for those of you that are much, much younger than me, when I was growing up, on our 16th birthday, if it was a weekday, okay, if it was a weekday, we got our driver's license. And it didn't make a difference what we had to do. I literally left school, and I had perfect attendance for 7 out of 12 years. All right? But I left school that day to go to the DPS office in Lufkin, Texas, to get my driver's license on my 16th birthday. Nothing was going to stop me from that. And I was no different than anybody I knew. This is what happened. In 1976, mine was way back before that, but in 1976, if I remember the statistic correctly, 80% of all high school seniors had their driver's license going in to their senior year, 80%. Now, I think it's 60% do not have their driver's license at the end of their senior year. Part of it's the kids, a whole lot of it's the parents, okay? But part of it has to do with that issue of how we communicate and so on. I just find that one humorous. Now, the ones I don't have slides on, let's go cover this one first. Less dating. Our kids are dating less than they were. Now, I really don't understand all the dynamic for that. I haven't studied this specifically. But it's very clear to show, the evidence clearly shows, our kids are dating less than they were. And it sort of started with the smartphone. Now, two of them that I didn't cover is alcohol usage. Alcohol usage has gone down significantly. Why? Because using alcohol is a social thing. And when you're in your room by yourself, that's probably not a social thing. Also, very similar thought, sexual activity. Sexual activity among our teens has gone down significantly. Why? Because they're by themselves all the time compared to what they used to be. And that's in her study as well, and she has charts on that. Increased isolation. That's what we're talking about. That's what the iPhone causes. It causes a decrease in sexual activity among older teens, alcohol use as well. Let's talk about the three primary problems with this. Number one is sexting. Sexting is where, I have a slide on here, it is sending, receiving, and forwarding sexual photos and sexually suggestive messages through text, message, or email, usually drawings, photographs, or videos. Okay, sexting is real bad, and don't think your kids might not be involved with it. One of my presentations that I made this year was specifically because the minister's wife at a very wonderful congregation, not the minister's wife, the minister's daughter, 14-year-old daughter, had been involved in sexting. And they didn't know it until it was pretty well in, let's call it the police officers kind of status. Don't think this doesn't happen. Don't think it doesn't happen. I want to tell you one other thing that irritates people when I tell them. On everything we're talking about today, we within the churches of Christ are typically statistically normal. Everything we talk about today, everything that we are statistically normal. So when I talk about pornography and sexting and all these other bad stuff, we're not completely statistically normal, but we're pretty close, according to the real studies out there. Okay, sexting is bad stuff. In a national survey, about 20% of teens admitted sending a sexual photograph, 40% admitted receiving one. Of the 20% that received it, 5% sent it to somebody else. This is the problem with sexting, besides the moral side of it. The moral side of it is big, but the one that you directly need to pay attention to is the legal side of it. About 6 years ago, a teacher in Tennessee confiscated a phone where a young woman has sent a partially nude picture of herself to her boyfriend. They were like 16, all right? He picked up that phone, and he called the sheriff and showed it to the sheriff. Anybody want to know the next action that took place? He went to jail for 3 weeks. The teacher did. Why? Because he is in possession of child pornography, all right? Now, the law is beginning to adjust on this, all right? But 5 or 6 years ago, the law wasn't where it needed to be. And he went to jail for 3 weeks, trying to get it all straight. I work at Cherokee Home. Do we ever have a problem with this? I'm sure we do. All right? So if we have a phone and we think there's something bad in it, what do? We call the sheriff, and we have him turn on the phone. We will not look at it ourselves. Why? Because we have been in possession of child pornography because that phone's in my hand. All right? It's serious business. It's serious business. The peak age for sexting is 16 to 17 years old, and then it quits at 18. Why would it quit when it's 18? Because they know they're going to really go to jail for it. All right? It's more serious business when they turn 18. They're legal adults. There's a lot of emotional consequences of this. The message of the photo could get out to the wrong people. We're going to talk about cyberbullying in just a moment. And this is the kind of thing that someone would send it somewhere else. Hey, if you don't do this and this and this for me or whatever, okay, I'm going to take that photograph I've got and I'm going to send it all over the internet. Reputations can be ruined, lots of things. Now, legally, the person sending may be prosecuted for the distribution of child pornography, and the person receiving may be prosecuted for possession of child pornography. It's serious business. And don't think it doesn't happen even within our church. One in seven kids will receive a sexual solicitation online. This is online predators. 44% of sexual predators are under 18. It's typically teenage boys. Victims are usually 13 to 15, 75% female, 25% male. It typically starts off by asking for a photograph. This leads to trafficking and things of that sort. Be aware of where your children are going and what they're doing on the internet. If you see things like posting personal information, interacting with people they shouldn't be interacting with, strangers on their buddy list, sending personal information, visiting places they shouldn't visit on the internet, talking about sex with their strangers, those are all indications, according to the FBI, that something may be happening. Warning signs: they get secretive about their activities, get obsessed not being online. They get angry when they can't get online. They get calls from people that you don't know. Get gifted packages from people that you don't know. Or if they constantly change the screen or turn off the computer whenever you walk by. That's telling you a lot. Telling you a whole lot. Talk about cyberbullying for just a moment. I wasn't even I barely talked about this for a number of years. I've only got one slide here. But let me tell you why I think it's a bigger issue than we often imagine. I did this presentation at the Jersey Village Church of Christ in Houston. I did it for Vacation Bible School. And we had about 20 teenagers that were helping do the Vacation Bible School. And, of course, their parents were there, too. So when I got through, it was a four-day seminar every night for 4 days. And I asked them, I said, I want you to mark the most important things that I talk about here. I had 35 things that I talk about. Mark the top five. Well, not a single parent marked cyberbullying. We called it cell phone bullying back then. But not a single parent marked cyberbullying as an issue. Not a one. Every boy marked it number one. Every boy marked it number one. And all the girls had it in the top five. Now, does that tell you there's a difference between what the boys think and what the parents think? Yes, it does. No teenage boy is going to walk up to mama and say, Mama, I'm being bullied by somebody on my phone. Okay? No, they're too macho for that. They should. So you as parents, if you've got teenagers, every now and then ask them, is anybody bothering you on this issue? And if so, act accordingly. Don't think it doesn't happen, because every boy at that congregation said it happened in one form or the other. And most of the girls. Yeah, at the last line here, this is new information. New reports indicate that girls are now more likely than boys to be cyberbullied. And we read the reports about how this often leads to emotional distress, often leads to suicide, and things of that sort. Other risky behaviors, other ways you can get in trouble online. Partying pictures, it's hard to say. What that means is you take pictures and you put it on the net, and those pictures really shouldn't be there. Especially if you're concerned about your Christian influence, okay? Number one, don't do the activity that would be questionable anyway. That would be best. But number two, don't put a picture of it. Don't put the evidence out there, all right? Number two, comparing yourselves. We talked about this a little bit with Facebook, all right? We like to compare ourselves to everybody else. That's part of the problems with the internet as a whole. Over-sexualized clothing. That means your Facebook picture is one that you wouldn't want your grandma to see. All right, what that boils down to. All right, do you want your grandma? That grandma's a good parameter on this. If your grandma can't read anything you put on Facebook, you really shouldn't put it on Facebook. All right, whether it's a photograph or whether it's a comment. Viral video attempts. This is one I never thought of on my own, but it's considered a significant one. What this is typically teenage boys trying to do something to get famous on the internet. And it often leads to death. It often leads to death, if not injury. Trying to do something silly in order to have a viral video. Okay, and humiliating others. I was reading something, a comment related to a news report the other day. And it was the comments from the person that were related to that were just like, I was sitting thinking, how humiliating can you be? How much more mean can you be to this person? We have to talk about pornography just a moment. Recently, pornography took over emails as the single largest source of or use of the internet. While about half of Americans over 25 believe it is basically wrong, for those that are 13 to 24, it's only a third. The numbers keep making that we become more liberal within our society. Now, this here I find is both ironic and, I'm sorry, a little bit humorous. Okay, this is from the Barna study. This is not me. This is the Barna group who does religious research. This is one of the things they came up with last year. Most teens and young adults view using porn as less wrong than not recycling, which means they've taken the moral side out of it. It's no longer a moral issue. Okay, and I find that exceptionally ironic. FBI reports talked about, I'm going to skip this right now because I'm running out of time. This talks about how prevalent it is. I do want you to notice, though, that the average child sees pornography at about 11. All right? Why? Because you can't avoid it. There's not a child here who has not seen pornography if they're on the internet. You can't help it because it's going to flash up there. They might have got rid of it in 2 seconds. All right? But it's going to come up because there's so much of it out there that it comes up with even names that you never would have thought of. How to prevent some of these problems that we're talking about. There's a lot of tools out there. You as a parent have the tools, or you have the ability to program your child's phone. Now, it's got the same problem it does with programming lots of other things. You got to read owner's manual, all right? And we don't do it. But you have the ability to program your child's phone. Allow them. You also have the ability, if you do it, you want to do it, to buy the right apps to allow you to monitor both their phone, even their PC, if you want to. But you also need to pay special attention to the games and chat sites that are not child-friendly. The one thing that I don't talk about today are video games. And I wish I did, and I used to. Video games are still a big, big issue. And I am going to eventually work those back into this presentation. Why? Because when I leave here, there'll be two or three of you, if it's normal, who tell me the real issue that I have, problem I have, is with video games. All right, so video games are a different topic that we just don't have time to cover today, but it's a big issue in and of itself. Go to the places that your child goes on the internet. Okay? Tell them not to erase where they've been. They know how to do it. It used to take 5 or 6 clicks to erase where you've been. Now you can tell your computer to automatically clean your computer up when you turn it off. All right? It's easy to do. Go to the places on the internet that they go, see for yourself what's going on. Use the tools that are available. There's profiles you can set up for your child's phone. You can set up things. It's easy if you look for the ability to do it. There's tools after tools out there to do this. Now, I want to talk about Facebook for just a moment. Did you know that if your child is under 13 years old on Facebook, somebody committed federal fraud? All right? I mean that sincerely. It is illegal to be on Facebook under 13 years old. All right? Now, I'm sure there's some kids in here under 13 years old that are on Facebook. Because we do it all the time. Remember that you need to have your kids' passwords. Okay, this is the meanest thing I'll say. Did you know that the U.S. Constitution related privacy does not apply to children? Okay? It doesn't. The parents say so applies to children. The Constitution applies to those 18 and older who don't have parents, who are on their own. You as a parent have the right to know everything about your child, and that privacy that we talk about goes into play when they become adults. Act like the parent. Keep up with what they're doing and know what they're doing. Have their passwords. Husbands, have your wife's passwords. Wives, have your husband's passwords. Parents, have your kids' passwords. And, simply put, the best place to put your PC in the house is on the kitchen table because it is the most open place in the house. You can find apps that monitor the teen's social behavior. There can be from free to very, very expensive. I tell everybody there's not one out there that's not a good 15-minute challenge for a 15-year-old boy, all right? But nevertheless, you need to try. Encourage the teen to be responsible. The reason we're talking about this, and I need to conclude now, everything we're talking about here has to do with what they call media convergence, all right? And that's a term you might not be familiar with, but what it is the fact that, did you know that this phone right here, and it's 3 years old, all right, this phone will do absolutely everything my PC will do. No exception. This is a Windows phone. It's got, you know, Word and Excel and PowerPoint. Now, nobody wants to do it in that small of a screen, all right? But nevertheless, it's all there. And that's the reason this is called convergence. We used to have to be concerned about what our kids are doing on the computer. Well, now we have to be concerned about what they're doing on their phone because their phone is basically a very, very small computer, all right? And for those of you that weren't familiar with that, at that level, you need to be aware of that. Got about a minute. I got just enough time to cover this. For those of you that are educators, remember that Piaget came up with a list of stages of educational development or something that effect. Okay, Lawrence Kohlberg came back a little bit later and took that same theory and adjusted it for moral development. And it came out with the 6 levels that our kids grow up. And I happen to agree with his thinking here. At the lowest level is the egocentric. It's the little baby who is only concerned about how wet or dirty they are or hungry. All right. As they grow up a little bit, they learn how to stay out of trouble, reward and punishment. If I do this, I get hugged. If I do this, I get hurt, and so on. grow up a little bit more, typically about 5 or 6 years old. They start clustering in little groups, their friends and their buddies, and they think about what makes me and my friends happy, okay? And they start doing things together. And then they grow up a little bit more, typically about teenage age, they grow up to know the limits of what can I do and still stay out of trouble. How far can I go and still stay out of trouble? And then, hopefully, they go up into young adulthood, and they think about what would a moral, right-thinking person think or do. These are biblical Christian concepts. Right is a conscious decision of personal ethics that appeal to logic, morality, and consistency. Here's what the social scientists that have consequently come back and studied this and studied this and studied this. And this is what they say. Well, let me back up. Have any of you ever met anybody that didn't get past number 4? How many think people you know that never got past number 4? All right. According to the experts, if any child ever gets past number 4, it will be through the primary influence of the primary parenting figure in their life. Always. That means we as adults have the responsibility to try to work diligently to move our child into that. Now, if you're not doing it as an adult, that means somebody else is the parent. I'm sorry. That means somebody else is doing it. And what I'm trying to say here is be proactive as a parent. Try to teach your child about basic morality and all these other issues so that somebody else won't teach it to them, because they're going to get it from somebody. And it would be better off if it's from you as the parent and the moral teachings that you would like to teach them. Thank you for your time. You've been a wonderful audience. My time is up now. Again, want to hope that you'll come back this afternoon. That's usually the audience that's the skimpiest. Okay, come back this afternoon and let's talk about television, how to deal with television. And again, in just a moment, I'll be talking about how to be a good Christian family. I want to say a prayer, and then we'll be through.